flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Good morning, folks. We've got a great show lined up for you on the last day of January, and we are getting really close to the Super Bowl, and in the 12 o'clock hour, we'll have a ramp up to the Super Bowl show with Jay Cicero, a segment that is President CEO of the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation, also the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl, and the Super Bowl host committee. So many different activities. I was looking through the media guide last evening about a lot of what's going on relative to the Super Bowl. Just absolutely incredible. And we'll be at the convention center all week next week, broadcasting live from there, bringing you a bunch of interviews and about what is going on throughout the city. Very exciting time. And during this segment, we'll spend some time with Jack and Susan Groh, Director and Associate Director of NFL Green. We'll find out exactly what that's about and what they hope to accomplish. Marcus Brown, Chair of the Super Bowl Host Committee, Senior Vice President General Counsel for Entergy New Orleans, which is the they are the founding sponsor for the host committee, and we'll get his thoughts about what is going on at the present time, as well as Jay Cicero, right? And we'll speak with Jay about all that is happening in the final days of preparation, because a lot of this stuff is going to be ramping up in a big way this weekend. At 11:30, we'll visit with Kevin Dolio, the Director of Aviation for the Louis Armstrong New Orleans International Airport, about their preparations for the influx of travelers coming in next week for the Super Bowl. And I just happened to go through the airport the other day and flying out and flying in after the snowstorm. And looks like it's in great shape. Things are looking up, and we'll get his thoughts. We'll have a segment at the beginning of the 11 o'clock hour with the St. Tammany Economic folks, Lacey Osborne, CEO and President of the St. Tammany Chamber of Commerce. And we'll also, in the back half of this hour, visit with retired Colonel of the Israeli Air Force, Alex Gann. We'll get a better understanding of what's actually happening with this hostage exchange in Israel. Things got a little testy the other day and a lot of comments going back and forth. So we'll find out from inside the borders of Israel what their observations are as to what is happening. So there was a story that broke, I guess it was yesterday, one in NOLA.com written by Gabriella Killett, revealing that longtime CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank, Natalie Jairo, who was at the helm for about 19 years, had been replaced. And the chairman of the board as well, Chairman Bert Wilson, and vice chair woman Kristen Albertson had been replaced as well as past chair Nick Carl from their positions on the nonprofit board. And the archdiocesan release that was handled by a third-party public relations firm said that the agency will be bringing in new leaders with refreshed vision to build on a strong foundation and to strengthen the spiritual dimension of Second Harvest as it continues its focus on feeding the poor and hungry. And in response to that, Bert Wilson, the chairman, had a press release of his own saying that the terminations were actually the result of months of increasingly aggressive pressure that the church had been placing on Second Harvest to contribute as much as $16 million towards settling the clergy sex abuse claims in the nearly five-year-old bankruptcy case. Mr. Wilson went on to say that our agreements with grant-giving organizations and other partners prohibit any expenditures that are non-secular or do not directly align with our sole mission of feeding the hungry, which is typical. I've served on a lot of not-for-profit boards. That is not unusual. And that the Archbishop has chosen to ignore these realities and jeopardize Second Harvest's ability to fulfill its mission and honor its contracts is both shocking and short-sighted. The outside public relations firm also said that recent developments have raised a concern about the level of communication between the committee and the corporate member and the spiritual dimension of the organization. And as a result, it was determined to be in the best interest of all parties that certain directors be relieved of their responsibilities. The nonprofit affiliate of the Archdiocese of New Orleans as a nonprofit affiliate of the Archdiocese of New Orleans, Amen is the sole corporate member of Second Harvest. So I don't know what's true, but let's approach it this way. If it is true that the Archdiocese is trying to grab $16 million from the Second Harvest organization simply because they are an affiliate nonprofit agency of the Archdiocese, shame, shame, shame on each and every one of them. And I think Mr. Wilson's right. Having served as part of executive committees and chairmen of a number of not-for-profits, this language that he talked about is not unusual. You are making commitments to a number of donors of what this is all about, other participating agencies that are providing funds to you, as well as government funds to you and alike. And you very much could put a lot of that at risk. If this is true, this is a desperation move on the part of the Archdiocese, in my opinion, that will have dire implications in the future. And it's really a shame. I've worked with Natalie Jairo for a long time. I've raised money for Second Harvesters. I've given money to Second Harvesters like many, many other folks in belief of that mission, know about their facility where they are, because my wife's family at one point actually owned that facility. And worked closely with a number of folks in communications about that facility and what it's about, what it's capable of, and so forth and so on after the passing of my father-in-law. And, you know, I visited that facility many times. They do an absolutely incredible job. have coordinated with them and partnered with them with both Thanksgiving and Christmas basket giveaways for years. We had a benefactor, big difference maker in this community who wants to remain anonymous, that provided the funds necessary. We recognized right away the best way to get the biggest bang for our buck was to team up with Second Harvest. I can tell you, since this article was posted, it has been really the talk of the town. Have received a lot of text messages from folks, friends, totally upset with the Archdiocese if this is what they are choosing to do. Some have gone to this extent, they are done. They are done. And it's going to be interesting to see what's next. Whether or not the respective parishes within this archdiocese are next up. I've heard over and over and over again from a number of members in the clergy that said that they had the archbishop's personal commitment that that would not ever happen. I would love to know whether or not that commitment was given to Second Harvest at any point in time. It would be of value, I think, to know whether or not that commitment was made. But in just kind of reading between the lines of what Mr. Wilson had to say, it was obvious that they are working really hard, and as the article pointed out, meaning the Archdiocese, in trying to collect or put together a fund of $62.5 million, and to have that cash in hand in order to try and bring some resolution to this litigation. And it's interesting that the Archdiocese, if this is true, would go about it this way to sacrifice so many things that they've done, so many programs that are so well-intentioned and have been incredibly successful, and obviously Second Harvest is one that a lot of people donate a lot of money to basically go and rob these organizations of the monies that have been donated to them that they've worked so hard in carrying forward their mission, to have to be subjected to, I'll call it abuse, because that's what it is. It's financial abuse of this organization, which I guess in some respects maybe comes naturally to some. I don't know. But this is really a shame. And I don't know who's advising these folks, but they're getting bad advice. And you're putting a lot of things at risk. And unfortunately, I think the organization will suffer. And maybe it's time for the creation of a new organization with the same mission. Because it seems as though the sanctity of a lot of what's been done historically, and the safety and security of these organizations and moving forward, it's not there any longer. And I think the confidence of the community has been rocked. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays itself out. It's not really just about Natalie Jarrow or Burt Wilson or Nick Carl, who's a great guy as well. Same with Kristen Albertson. They give back to the community in so many different ways. In fact, I was looking, some of them, I know of them, but I don't know them personally, and was looking at some of the sites last evening to find out, you know, what other organization they're participating in, and it's a lot. So these are givers. These are people giving back to the community. And it convinced me that talking about this morning was the right thing to do, because if I had a side on on one side or the other, I believe exactly what Mr. Wilson said. Because I think the Archdiocese right now is desperate to try and put these dollars together. And $16 million to Second Harvest, I can promise you, they work hard. In fact, we just did something together with Metropolitan Health Group and Second Harvest over the Christmas holidays. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what will, where this will ultimately end up. And hopefully this is not true, quite frankly, because I think folks' reaction are going to be very similar to mine. And just by looking at the text, you know, it looks as though there are not many people saying something otherwise. They're believing the same thing. And most folks are saying they're not going to donate money to Second Harvest until the Archbishop resigns. This was obviously a very dangerous action by a desperate archdiocese. And as the story continues to reveal itself, we know so much more today than we've known in years past, obviously. And as I said before, it's going to be interesting to see where this all ends up. We will be right back. 504-260-1870. Love to hear from you. Stay with us.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With us. So a lot of folks are saying, I can't believe that Second Harvesters has $16 million in order to give. I don't think people recognize just how big that organization truly is, which they provide food to 400,000 needy residents in 23 parishes across the state, as reported in the NOLA.com article. I mean, I didn't know the specific numbers, but I know that they are huge. And the necessary capital, working capital, cover the bills. They pay for some of the food. Obviously, the donations come in. Some of the food items are donated by manufacturers, producers, and others. And it's a big, big operation. It's not a small operation, right? It actually might be one of the healthiest operations affiliated with the Archdiocese, which why I guess it would make sense that that's where they would go if this story's true, looking for a fairly large commitment of the $62 million settlement fund that they're trying to put together, right? Be far greater, you know, almost, 20-some-odd percent of the overall total. So a lot of money. Interesting, though, you know, there are no priests over there. Yeah, and it's just kind of mind-boggling to me how this is ultimately playing itself out. One of the things that that the chairman said in his release, and good for Natalie. And in fact, you know, I always knew that this woman was of sound judgment and character. According to Mr. Wilson, the chairman, he said of Natalie, she resolutely refused to reallocate donor funds that are solely intended to help alleviate hunger and food insecurity in South Louisiana. You know, the interesting thing is that the archdiocese finds itself in this predicament because of their lack of willingness to do the right thing. And in fact, I've said many times, this was simple. I mean, this is not a conflict, really, in my view, of canon law versus, you know, our laws. And I suggested to many throughout this investigation, and have talked to a lot of people through the process, call the police. We conduct investigations every day as it relates to rape and abuse out there that people never know about. And in some cases, we're able to rule an offender in, and in some cases, you end up ruling an offender out for a whole host of reasons. Evidence comes to you in many ways, shapes, and forms. There's a lot of protection out there where these records are shielded from the Public Records Act, these investigations, because of the sensitivities involved. And it was easy, in my view, to do the right thing. Call the police. Call 911. Call directly to your local law enforcement agency. You know, I mean, all of these things were simple things to accomplish, but it's as though that's not what we're looking to do. And now we've reached a crossroads where the financial viability of this archdiocese and its ability to stand itself up is at risk. Obviously, the survivors want more. They're probably entitled to more, many of whom's lives have been completely and totally riddled, ruined from an emotional perspective, a spiritual perspective, a physical perspective, and otherwise. And I get, you know, that in the bankruptcy, we're trying to resolve this and resolve that and dealing with the claims of these individuals. And, you know, when you're not doing the right thing on the front end like this, this is what happens. Let's go to Frankie. Frankie, you're up. What say you?
Yes, sir. First time caller. And you highly regard. I remember I came up through Harry Lee days, House Lee and all that stuff, originally from Death Trans. Look, I'm just wondering, if the Archdiocese is in bankruptcy, why did they just buy here in Mandeville down the street from me? Lady Lake just bought a $2.5 million venue that was used for a wedding that, you know, to add on to the church. So, I mean, that $2.5 million could have gone to survivors.
Our Lady of the Lake, I'm not sure, is affiliated with the Archdiocese. I know that it's affiliated with an order that's not necessarily the Archdiocese. Not all orders of the Catholic faith actually are, fall under the archdiocese, to the best of my recollection. So there are a number of faith-based organizations out there that are not really within the construct of the archdiocese. And some of their assets are not within the construct of the archdiocese either. So there is a difference, and it's not a, this. It's a pretty big umbrella, but it's not as big as some folks actually believe it to be, and that is some of the differences that exists there. All right. We're going to get to a break, and when we come back, we will visit with Colonel Gann, so stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by retired Colonel in the Israeli Air Force, Alex Gann. He has joined us many, many times to give us kind of the inside perspective and look of what's happening. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good evening. Over here,
so,
please.
Colonel, absolutely. Colonel, we have been in this ceasefire status in order to begin the hostage transfer. That started the other day. There was a couple of incidents that happened on the Gazan side with Israeli hostages that were being released. In your view, how has that gone so far? What is the reaction of the Israeli population to what has happened thus far? And specifically talk about what happened the other day.
Well, first of all, everybody is excited and anxious to see the return of those hostages after a year and 3 months of spending time in tunnels and hell. So each and every one of them is a celebration by its own to the whole nation. And I can say that the first ones who have returned basically are in an acceptable physical situation. We do not know their mental situation. And definitely we do not hear any of their stories. I think they do not tell anything yet, because they don't want to jeopardize the procedure. And if they start telling stories about atrocities, then something will stop the procedure. What happened in Gaza is not in the first time. Every time they release the hostages, they make a whole big ceremony out of it. And actually what happened in Khan Yunis yesterday was he lost control of the situation, and the whole mob was trying to touch or scare or do something to these people. There was a jet coming through, so it will take a half a second. Anyhow, 1 second. I apologize. Anyhow,
no problem.
What happened was really scary. Yeah, thank you. It was really scary. And we are afraid that if it happens again, something can harm them. And Israel told very clearly that if it happens once more, they will not open the Rafah border crossing. Something will have to happen. Hamas is testing our patience, and they're trying every trick in the book just to play on the nerves of the Israeli nation and people and the hostages' families. But I think we are determined to pull through at least for the first stage, which will end after 42 days, the beginning of March. And we hope it will go on to the second stage. Now, we know the second stage will be more complex, because many people will return in coffins. People that we don't know if they're dead or alive, and Hamas is still refusing to give a detailed report on the situation in each and every one. I think the ones that, at least I think most of the people are worried about is the mother, Shiri Bibas, and her two babies, which one was 2 years old and one was 9 months when they were taken hostages and never heard of since. And we don't know if they're dead or alive or what happened with them. And they're still refusing to reveal this information. So I hope it will pull through. What can we say? Our fingers are crossed.
And I guess you talk about testing of patients. There's no doubt that Hamas is trying to send a signal that they are alive and well and will continue to exist in some way, shape, or form in spite of the Israeli attempts to eliminate Gaza of Hamas, right?
Yeah. Well, I think Israel did a very poor job on the political side of finding a replacement for Hamas. We did not do the job which was supposed to be done. But I think so. Hamas eventually is crawling out from the holes in the tunnels, and before they were fighting in civil clothes among the people, and now they're back in uniform and they're all dressed up and shiny. But they think they will maintain control of Gaza. I think what will happen is the pressure. I think mostly from the Trump administration and the Arab nations, they will not fund the recovery of Gaza as long as Hamas is controlling in this way. So this will be a very interesting point to see what happens. And if the countries who are intending to fund the rebuilding of Gaza will strong stand enough, something will happen. If they will send the money in, Hamas will be back in power in no time. So this is to be seen yet. And it's a very, very touchy situation. Hamas has lost...
No, go ahead.
I said Hamas lost, I don't know, we don't know the exact number, but it can be between 14 and 20,000 of its people in this war. But they have been replacing them very easily because they got control of all the food, which they get for nothing, they sell to the population, and many people, they recruit them with this money. So they have enough money and enough resources. So they have a lot of new people in the ranks, which may be not experienced, but they have the number of people. Yeah.
What do you think the sentiment is amongst the Palestinian people towards Hamas in Gaza? I mean, as a number of these folks return to their neighborhoods, yeah.
We see it here a lot on our media and TV. They're actually split into half. I can't say exactly in half, but they're split. Some of them are really devastated. You know, they come back and there's no house. There's no house, there's no neighborhood, there's nothing, just a pile of rebels. And they're saying, you know, what did we gain with this? What did you do for us? And this is what you did to us, and Hamas should go to hell. Other people say, you know, it's part of our fighting, it's part of the propaganda of the Hamas. Maybe they're saying it out of fear, maybe they're saying it out of ideology. They're saying, no, well, this is the price we paid. It's a big victory for us. We are still standing, and the Israelis are getting out of Gaza. So we won the war. If this is winning, so let them think they were winning. Gaza is a huge pile of rubble. It's unbelievable what's left there. And it's very interesting, actually, to see, you know, Trump has this idea of transferring part of the population from Gaza into Egypt and Jordan. I don't know what will happen, but it's interesting that the people of Gaza are saying, we won't move because this is our place and this is our home. But if this is your home, so why are you calling yourself refugees? So you can't be a refugee at your home. But, you know, they will say whatever it's needed to get sympathy. So I don't know what will happen with them. it's really part of them go, they went back north, and now they're moving back south because there's nothing over there. No houses, no infrastructure, and no electricity, no running water, et cetera, et cetera. So they go back south to the humanitarian areas.
I mean, I've heard that there's probably less than 10% of the structures remaining that could even be rehabilitated in a short period of time, but that's not going to happen. So, I mean, I would imagine then we're looking at a decade plus number of years before we even have the ability to create suitable housing for any population in Gaza.
It's interesting because it depends how much money and how much effort goes into this. If you remember, at least I remember when I was the pictures of after World War II, you know, when Dresden was ruined totally, it took them 3 years and they built a city. Gaza can be built, but it has to be built in a new way. Not as a refugee camp. They have to build modern houses. They have to build high rises, et cetera, et cetera. Part of it can be built quite fast. But as a city, it will take 5-10 years easily to rebuild it. And we'll have to, again, make sure that they don't rebuild the whole underground infrastructure, which was unbelievable over there. They had about 450 miles of tunnels under this area of Gaza, and at the whole city underground. So if they intend to build that again, I don't know what will happen. We will see.
Yeah, it would seem to me that would be the first order of business to destroy the tunnel, the myriad of tunnels that are running through Gaza at the present.
You have to find them. You know, I think we destroyed maybe over half of it, or 67%, but there's still a huge amount still under there because we couldn't find everything in Gaza. Even people, you know, who were there, over there with the boots, was a challenge to find them. And some of them have not been located until today. Because you can see we have people over there still. Some of them we know we didn't go into because we were afraid the people are there. So, it's still to be seen. But it's a huge challenge, and I will not say a biblical level, but it's a huge, huge challenge with a lot of money, a lot of effort, and we'll see what will happen. Meantime, they live in tents if they're lucky.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I know a lot of folks here are saying their prayers that the vast majority of the hostages gets released sooner rather than later. Still uncertain, no proof of life, and hope more are alive than are dead. Alex, as always, thank you so much, Colonel Alex Gann, for joining us. Stay safe, my friend.
Thank you, and thank you for everything. Bye-bye. Good night.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us, folks. Folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with CEO and President of the St. Tammany Chamber of Commerce, Lacey Osborne, and we'll get an update as to what is happening in the North Shore, on the North Shore, relative to the business community over there, an important part of our region. So stay with us. We'll be right back.